Tom Doig is author of The Coalface, a book that outlines the economic, health and political fallout from a 45-day-long coal mine fire from the eyes of the residents of Morwell, the town that sits less than 1 kilometre from the open-cut mine. Here is Tom reading the prologue.
In February of 2014, the open-cut coal mine next to the Hazelwood Power Station caught fire. It burnt out of control for 45 days, over 1,000 hours. In the Latrobe Valley, over 70,000 people live within 20 kilometres of the mine. Choking smoke and toxic gases filled the valley. The short-term health effects included stinging eyes, sore throats, headaches, difficulty breathing, chest pains, rashes, nausea, metallic taste in mouth, bleeding gums, bleeding noses, bleeding eyes, diarrhoea, vomiting, and 23 probable deaths. The medium and long-term health effects remain to be seen. The mine fire was, quote, a world's first in terms of prolonged adverse air quality, according to the Environmental Protection Authority Victoria. Environment Victoria described the smoke as, quote, possibly the worst incident of environmental pollution in our state's history. The mine fire was one of the worst industrial disasters Victoria has ever seen.
After that, I wanted to know how Tom came to cover one of the worst environmental, industrial and health disasters we've ever seen.
The way that I sort of found out about the Hazelwood mine fire was, I mean, it was on the news like in fleeting moments when the fire happened, and I was doing a journalism PhD looking at people's experiences of climate change, which sort of meant I was in a way waiting for significant weather events or environmental events to occur. So when the mine fire happened, I was curious in a very abstract way. But what really piqued my interest was not till like 2 weeks into the fire when I bumped into an old friend in Melbourne, and he lives down that way, and he'd driven up through the smoke that morning, and he was like white as a sheet and in shock. And he was like, it's like a disaster movie, this like ash raining from the sky. The streets were deserted, and, you know, you see these people shuffling around wearing face masks like a zombie movie. And he painted this really, like, quite ghastly apocalyptic scene. And, yeah, I was Googling it, and there was very little information about it, especially in terms of the effect on the town. So I sort of just went down there, and I sort of had this quite overwhelming experience of... It was somewhere between a disaster zone and business as usual, you know? It was extremely ambiguous in a way, because there was the strange smell in the air, and there were... little flakes of coal ash raining down, but I couldn't notice my breathing being affected or anything like that, or at least at first, and there were still some people wandering around, and there were some emergency services people from the CFA and from the EPA sort of saying, yeah, look, it's a bit bad, but it's not too bad. I wouldn't stay here the night if I was you, but it's not that big a deal. And they were very much doing a keep calm, it's cool kind of vibe thing. I stayed there overnight, and when I woke up the next morning, I had a very bad headache and was coughing up green phlegm. I felt really ill, and in retrospect, I think I probably had carbon monoxide poisoning because I was quite disoriented and a bit confused. I ended up writing a short article about that, and then some people from Morwell got in touch with me on Twitter, actually. Wendy Farmer, who was sort of like a resident of the Latrobe Valley of Newborough, which is about 20 k's away from the fire, she got in touch over Twitter and said, read your article, thank you. We need help, you know, we are suffering. Would you come to Parliament to speak on the steps of Parliament? We're having a protest. And I was like, sure, I've done that in the past. I'm sort of quite sceptical about politics and protesting, but I was like, you know, this is a fairly cut and dried case of something being handled very badly. And I went along and spoke on the steps of Parliament and sort of met this kind of amazing cross-section of electricians, young mums with the kids. Wendy Farmer herself was this sort of incredible figure. A month earlier, she'd just been like very, you know, chilled out mother of three, working part-time as a medical receptionist, who was now like on the steps of Parliament railing against the system. And then her husband, Brett Farmer, was there, and he's a coal mine worker who'd got quite sick from the smoke, who was there to support his wife but was too scared to actually join the protest because he was worried he was going to lose his job. So he was sort of hanging out 100 metres down the road watching the whole thing.
You're listening to 4ZZZ. We're speaking with Tom Doig, author of The Coalface. As Tom described the town and the people, I wanted to know if this was a town of rabble-rousers or just people who were pushed too far.
The sense that I got is that Morwell in particular and the Latrobe Valley in general is a very apolitical town. It's very much a mining community. You do the work, you get paid, you have a job for life, and yes, you die early, but that's just how it works. I don't actually know if there's been anything like any kind of political protests of any sort really in that town. But a couple of weeks into the mine fire, people were just so shitted off. Across the community, people were getting sick, and literally horror stories about people's kids bleeding from the eyes. Yeah, people were sort of traumatized and radicalized by the fire. Mine workers, ex-mine workers, all pitching together. And there was a protest of, I think it was like 6,000 people in Morwell. And it's a town of 14,000 in a valley of 70,000. So if you did the stats, you know, for me that equates to sort of 300,000 people turning out on the streets of Melbourne, or, you know, 100,000 or 150,000 people in Brisbane, you know, like it was massive. And a group formed around that, and they called themselves Voices of the Valley. And it was sort of part of what really, I guess, drew me to this story, is it was sort of people who had suffered in a fairly unambiguous way and were sort of reacting to that because the government was doing very little. And the mine owners, who were GDF Sewers at the time, they rebranded to ENGIE, were just being so contemptuous, really. They weren't even really responding to the media, they weren't apologising, and they were just completely sort of like a closed shop about it.
I wanted to know what the broader impacts of the fire were across the society and the town and the community.
Yeah, first and foremost, scientific, like public health experts, including actually Brisbane's own Adrian Barnett, he estimated that 23 extra people died more than usual during the 6 weeks of the fire. And that's sort of not taking into account statistical increases of death that are likely to sort of go on for the next 50 years. So one of the major things that happened is there was an inquiry launched, like the state government launched the Hazelwood Mine Fire Inquiry. That looked into all manner of basically industrial negligence by the mine owners, poor regulation by WorkSafe and the mine operators. The original inquiry didn't even actually look into health effects on the community. So Voices of the Valley, one of the great things it did is some citizens journalism sleuthing to prove what it thought was an increase in deaths. That was one of the major things that got the mine fire inquiry reopened. The reopened inquiry looked into the increases in deaths, but it also looked into all these other things that had just been drifting, badly regulated, not looked into, including mine rehabilitation, which was a complete shambles. Like, all the regulators were asleep at the wheels and the corporate owners were running the place into the ground because that was a way to save money. They had a $12 million mine bond, so if they went bankrupt or buggered off, that $12 million was meant to cover the rehab, which the company itself was quoting at $75 million. Other experts were sort of saying it's more like $300 to $400 million. The latest quote has grown to $750 million, which includes them expecting to tip some ungodly amount of gigalitres, equivalent to two Sydney harbours, of river water into the mine void, free of charge. That's like $500 million worth of water that's going to get diverted from farms or drinking water to flood this mine in a way that they can't even guarantee is not going to become toxic. And they also can't guarantee that the mine wall, which is 130 metres high and 400 metres from the edge of town, is stable. So Daniel Andrews, who's the Victorian Premier, ramped up the rehabilitation bond. WorkSafe Victoria basically had to pull their socks up and is now basically pressing criminal charges against the mine operators. And actually, this is good timing because just in the last week, they've started the court case. So this is all unfolding. So they've got, I think, 10 charges of breaches of workplace health and safety, liable for tens of millions of dollars of damages. If and when that's successful, that will open the door for civic litigation for people who've died or had their health ruined.
So, in Queensland, we have the controversial Carmichael coal mine that's still on the table in political speak, the Acland coal mine, which was stopped last month by the Queensland Land and Environment Court, and we have a proposed coal mine for Kingaroy that, like Hazelwood, right next to Morwell, will sit as close as 1 kilometre from Kingaroy town. When will our governments learn? You're listening to 4ZZZ Brisbane. Here is Mining Camp Blues by Trixie Smith and Fletcher Hudson.
Many times I wondered when they took my daddy down. Many times I wondered when they took my daddy down. Thank you. that my daddy had gone to